The phone call didn't wake me up, but I was still in bed. I didn't recognize the number, but I always pick up, so I picked up. The person who was on the other end of the line was well-spoken, a lovely voice, and said, "Is this Internet Archives?" I said, "Sort of." And he said, "I have a problem with a Wordle game on the archive." And I said, "Fantastic, what's the problem?" And he said, "I can't get it to save." And I said, "Okay, well, what's the identifier you're using?" And he said, I don't know. And I said, "Okay, well, where did you get the number?" "I don't remember." And there it ended. The game was over. I wasn't bothered by the fact that I had received a prank phone call on my personal cell phone. I was disappointed, like an old monk standing in front of a monastery, seeing somebody panting as they climbed up the 10,000 steps. It was a letdown that they had come all this way to do so little. For you see, I didn't just adopt the telephone. I was born in it. I was raised in it. And I was hoping, in my own way, for yet one more battle. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Daniel Boyd, Jeff Atwood, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. Now, I'm not bothered by the fact that somebody got their hands on my personal cell phone number. You can have it. It's 215 text files. It really, really is. You can call me anytime. I might not pick up, but it does get to me. I'm not bothered by having a public phone number. I know that in any sort of situation, people could apply a whole range of much more destructive approaches to calling me. I simply have never had a problem with being an open line of communication to people who sought me out. It's not hard to figure out where this came from. I was extraordinarily lonely in my preteens, having had a divorce separate me from a lineage of friends and school and possibilities, moving into new and different social groups that I didn't jibe with in any way, turning me against whatever I was doing day to day and making me wish that there was something more to what was going on. Naturally, when bulletin board systems became part of my life, along with an awareness of things like phone freaking and user meetups, I jumped at the chance, like somebody might jump for dry land after being lost at sea for so long. It was a place I could find my footing in, a place where I would be able to express myself and build identities that would shift and change as I needed. Along with adopting a new place as your home, whether it's a town or a virtual space like a telephone or bulletin board, you've got to develop your skills. I tried to become a better typer, a better writer, somebody who could put his thoughts together really quickly during the small time limits that bulletin boards would give me. And as I started to go on to phone conferences and talk with people over the phone, I became very, very invested in how I sounded. Even in middle school, they were putting me in the baritone section, so I had a good low voice that could be years beyond my actual age. But that's only half of the battle. The other weapons in your arsenal of conversation have to be the ability to shift subjects on a dime, to have an answer for everything, and be able to know where your point in the conversation was, and to never, ever let go if you felt that people needed to hear what you had to say. And once they have a comfort level in a place, nobody feels that what they are saying is more important than a teenager. On phone conferences, I honed my abilities. I dealt with people being smashed together from all parts of the country, some of whom were completely unwilling to give me any slack and would make demands, cut me off, and if I didn't come back with a good retort, a smarter way of saying things, or even more insidiously, make myself seem incompetent and then snap with the lyrical relevance of a rattlesnake, I wouldn't have survived as long as I did. These honed skills made me comfortable, not just on stage performing in front of others, but becoming my school announcer, being on the radio in college, and then doing speeches in public as part of my historical, archiving, and technical work. I learned the ins and outs of the lyrics of people, how they breathe ideas, how they bring together what they're thinking, and being able to extemporaneously build on that as it was required. One of the aspects of my speeches that are always odd to look at when I see the recordings is how little of it was planned in advance, because if I find the audience is moving in a certain direction or are responding oddly, my outline will go completely out the window. I will find a new way to express what I'm doing, make them feel involved as I go off on a tangent or respond to somebody. All through my life as a teenager through my 30s, I had a world where people could reach me by the phone and might choose to do so. They would call up, I would answer, and sometimes I would have no idea who was calling, where they were coming from, or what they wanted me to know. Did I get death threats? Yes, I've gotten those before. But I also got so many people who would come out of the darkness to tell me something they thought I needed to hear, to bond with me in some way, to transact with me, to make a deal or present an idea and ask me if I wanted to be part of it. My 20s would have me in a variety of apartments with all different kinds of landline phones, many of them with massive extension cords so I could walk around the rooms that I was in thinking of what to say next, or being able to look out a window while I weaved stories and answers for what people were asking. Perhaps I was calling somebody myself and trying to extract information from them or make a connection, and in doing so, I would stare out into the middle space, becoming just a voice in the darkness to ask them that one fact, that one linkage that I was seeking. In the bounty of the cell phone, the smartphone era, a lot of these skills, a lot of these advantages have become almost too much to handle. The fact that we can make phone calls throughout the country essentially for free, or being able to send text or pictures in lieu of any sort of conversation, means that two things have happened. First, those skills that I found so vital between my teens have a potential to atrophy. Like an unused muscle, like a forgotten procedure that you have a fuzzy memory of, but it's been a long time since you've shaken the rust out and tried it again. Also, in these intervening decades, there are people who have grown up not knowing the power of a landline conversation with a stranger, where you meet each other in a conversation, not anonymous, but obfuscated, and from this hazy foundation, you craft an interaction. Perhaps that interaction is a bridging of knowledge, but sometimes it's a fight. It's calling somebody to tell them you don't agree with them, that you're angry at them, that they've made a wrong choice, that you need to tell them something. And while I do agree, this can lead to some very, very dark paths. I know where I stand when somebody calls me and begins a conversation. Let's revisit my prank call. The cell phone rings. It's 10 in the morning. Since I know how time zones work, it's very unlikely that somebody from the West Coast is calling me at 7 in the morning, and it seems like the person is either in Central or Eastern Standard Time, 9 a.m. or 10 a.m. They're calling me in the morning on a weekday. That means they're up because it's time for work, or they're working, or a student, yet there's enough time to call me. They ask the first question. I know it's a male. I know he's well-spoken enough. I can tell from his accent and his syllables that he's between 18 and mid-30s. His voice is energetic, which means he might be young or simply full of energy because his day has started. The question he asked was, is this Internet Archives? First, indicates that he's building himself up to ask me a question that he already knows is facile, not related to what he's actually trying to accomplish. He says Internet Archives. This is not a name used by the organization. It sounds like he either misheard the term that he was supposed to use, or he doesn't remember it right. He's also, of course, calling my private cell phone, which I know he wouldn't have in relation to the Internet Archive. Therefore, in one sentence, he has revealed to me he's a young person, starting his day energetically, calling me with a made-up reason. Now, at this point, there's two ways this can go. Either this is a friend or an acquaintance who's calling me up to mess with me, and this is his way of saying hello, and he actually wants to talk to me about a project, or, less likely, this is a person trying to prank me. But he quickly takes me from knowing it's a friend or acquaintance to being some sort of odd prank because he's asking a technical question. Why isn't my Wordle game saving in emulation? A kind of miasma of words that are meant to sound like a technical question but aren't quite. When my answer starts to work down, as somebody who has dealt with emulation technical questions for 10 years now, and when he starts stumbling on them, when you realize he's done nothing to back up what he is saying, you start to wonder, what's the end game here? Because every prank call has an end game. The end game will be a slew of profanity, a direct threat, a laugh, a bunch of people giggling, or maybe just hanging up on people. It has an end game, and so from the moment you determine it's a prank call, you want to know, where is this going? I start to answer some of his questions, but I'm also peppering him with additional information requests, and he is not bringing his A game. He's responding with, I don't know, I saw it somewhere. When it is impossibly easy to make up relatively reasonable fiction as to what got you here. At that point, I, the old monk on top of Prank Mountain, realize I don't even have to bring out a deadly move. I don't have to bring out some of the more complicated pranks that I've had done on me or done to others. All I have to do is explore that 1% possibility that this is truly a legitimate person who has a legitimate request of me, figure out if that's the case, and if it's not, stop the call. One more question, he says he doesn't know, and I end the call. Because fundamentally, in prank calls, getting an emotional response from somebody is a winning scenario, even if it's bewilderment or rage or misery portrayed in some way. That's a victory in prank calls. Prank calls are explorations of improv where the other party has no idea they're on the stage. That's their nature. I don't know if the phone call is being recorded or if they were put up to it. I don't know the backstory, and I probably would never be told. So once I determine there's nothing here for me, there's nothing here to make things better, it's time to hang up. So after I hung up and rolled around in bed and decided it was time to start my day, I realized I wasn't feeling anger or inconvenience or frustration. I was disappointed. Somebody had come expecting to do some level of battle, of some sort of lyrical back and forth. But they had packed a candy bar to climb Mount Everest. They had brought a Q-tip to clean a gas station bathroom. Their lyrical larder was empty. And I felt, well, the universe can do so much better. So I went on Twitter, and I gave the world my cell phone again. The reason I've given my cell phone away on Twitter in the past still stands. It's for people who are struggling, who need to reach out, who maybe in some way remember me as some sort of figure of wisdom and perspective, and they call me because they're feeling urges of self-harm. And I have had some very very wonderful conversations with people who were just seeking that 5 to 10 to 15 minute conversation that's the difference between choosing darkness and choosing to face light a little while longer. For that reason, I don't care who knows my number. This supposed burden of a voice phone call is a gift that will keep on giving. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to Josiah Lusher, James Bequianu, Mark Pilgrim, Emilio Oliveira, Ernie Hershey, Michael Rubin, Craig Talbert, Dileep Reddy, Sean Kelly, Trixie the Cat, John Sturm, Eugene, and Anonymous, along with the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. The first prank phone call happened within 5 minutes of posting my number on Twitter. The person who was calling from Ireland, and asked how I was doing, and I told him. We talked about 10 minutes, and he was very kind to me. And as the conversation drifted, he finally said, "By the way, do you know who this is?" And I said, "No, I just talk to everybody like they deserve to be talked to." And he went, "Oh, well, it's John Romero, man. And it's been great to talk to you."